So on the morning of August 19th, 1953, the CIA operative who is, running this massive covert operation in Iran, he sends a frantic cable back to his bosses in Washington.
Yeah, Kermit Roosevelt.
Right, Kermit Roosevelt. And he basically admits, like, the situation is totally out of my control. The plan is falling apart.
Which is just, I mean, it's an incredibly chaotic way to start your day.
Totally. But then by that very same afternoon, the Iranian government had completely fallen.
Right.
The prime minister is ousted. The military is controlling the streets. And this operation that the CIA thought was failing had somehow miraculously succeeded.
It's wild.
So, who actually pulled the trigger? Welcome to the deep dive. We've been tracing a story that honestly feels like a political thriller, the 1953 overthrow of Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh.
We have, yeah.
But today, our mission is to pull way, way back. We're looking at the long shadow of those four chaotic days in August.
And we really have to, because this wasn't just a localized regime change.
No, not at all. Okay, let's unpack this. Think of 1953 not as just a historical event, but as an earthquake.
I like that.
We are going to map the tsunami it caused, how it permanently rewired the global political economy. And then we're going to question if we even know who triggered the fault line in the first place.
Right, and that's the thing. We aren't just going to look at what happened, but why it actually matters for you today.
Exactly.
Because the most fascinating part of this dossier we're looking at is how the history we thought was settled, the standard narrative, is actually highly contested by modern scholars.
Yeah, that tidy story about American empire might be completely wrong. So before we look at the long-term blowback, I feel like we have to understand the immediate material realities this coup created.
The spoils of the coup,
Wait,
basically.
what did the architects actually win? Because this whole crisis started over oil.
It did. It was all about the oil.
The British lost their monopoly. So, they get kicked out, the coup happens. Do the British just walk right back into Iran and take over again?
Well, no.
Yeah.
And that is a massive shift that ends up completely rewriting global energy markets.
Okay.
The British didn't get their absolute monopoly back. Instead, in 1954, a new arrangement was signed, called the Consortium Agreement.
So what was this consortium? How did it actually work on the ground?
Think of it as a super cartel.
A super cartel.
Yeah, the old British monopoly was replaced by this group of Western companies. So we're talking British, American, and a few European firms coming together.
Okay, so spreading the wealth around the West.
Exactly. And this consortium took over roughly half of Iran's oil production.
Got it.
But here's the crucial mechanism. These Western companies, they dictated the output quotas. They set the prices.
Wait, really? So even after all the bloodshed of the coup, Iran still didn't have control over its own primary resource?
Exactly. I mean, they got a slightly better profit-sharing deal.
Like a 50-50 split?
Usually,
Yeah.
about 50-50, but they were completely frozen out of the actual decision-making process. The board of directors sitting in London and Washington decided how much Iranian oil hit the global market.
Which fundamentally reshapes everything. You suddenly have this Western-dominated oil order dictating Persian Gulf politics.
Totally.
And reading through the sources, you can really see how this exact arrangement fed directly into the later rise of OPEC.
Oh, absolutely. That's the direct line.
Because it's like treating a sovereign nation like a corporate subsidiary. The extraction of resources is perfectly organized for the shareholders back west.
Right.
But the oil-producing nations eventually realize, hey, we need our own cartel to fight this Western cartel.
And that leads straight to the massive oil shocks of the 1970s.
Right. But going back to Iran in the 50s, that corporate stability had a massive human cost because you
Yeah.
just overthrew a highly popular prime minister.
You too.
The local workers aren't exactly going to just nod and smile at the new Western managers. How do you keep the local workers in line?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where 1953 becomes a Cold War template. To keep a lid on things, you bring back an autocrat.
The Shah.
Right. The Shah returns, but he doesn't come back as just a figurehead. He consolidates absolute, unchecked power.
And he needs a brutal management team to enforce that.
Yes. And that brings us to 1957, when he creates SAVAK,
The secret
the
police.
feared secret police. And the sources point out he did this with the direct help of the CIA and Israeli intelligence.
Wow.
So stability and resource extraction were prioritized over fragile democratic institutions. And Washington exported this exact model far beyond in Iran.
But, you know, that corporate stability was a dangerous illusion. It had a fatal flaw.
It did.
And the bill came due 25 years later.
It always does. You can't suppress a population like that without massive consequences.
Right. So imagine you're living in a country where a foreign power violently overthrew your elected leader 25 years ago.
Yeah.
How would that shape your view of them today? For many Iranians, 1953 was the original sin.
What's fascinating here is the direct cause and effect chain. The United States could not save the monarchy it had restored.
Nope. The explosion finally happened in 1979. The Shah flees and Ruhollah Khomeini takes power.
Right. And then we get to November 4th, 1979.
The hostage crisis.
Exactly. After the Shah was admitted to the U.S. for medical care, militants seized the U.S. embassy.
And they weren't just acting out of nowhere. During that whole 444-day crisis, the revolutionaries explicitly chanted about 1953.
They invoked it constantly. To them, the embassy takeover was a defensive move to stop another coup.
Is this the ultimate historical example of unintended consequences?
It really might be. I mean, the very action taken to secure a reliable ally manufactured this profound enmity that still drives regional crises today.
It's incredible. But, you know, here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
We've laid out these massive consequences, and we generally attribute them to this confident imperial CIA pulling the strings.
The tidy CIA mastermind myth.
Right, the myth. Because the historical sources tell us that narrative might actually be wrong.
It's highly debated.
Let's talk about the collapse narrative. Because scholars like Gregory Brew argue Eisenhower didn't act out of confident imperial design.
No, not at all.
He acted out of fear.
Yeah, fear that Iran was on the verge of economic and political collapse.
Right, because of the British oil embargo. The country was basically bankrupt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Eisenhower wasn't strutting around feeling powerful. He was panicked.
Panicked that the pro-Soviet Tudor party was going to take over.
Right.
So, okay, but even if the motive was fear, the CIA still ran the show, didn't they?
Well, this is the core of the agency debate.
Okay.
Historian Mark Gezierowski stresses that CIA covert action was absolutely decisive. The money, the mobs.
Right, the classic narrative.
But then you have others, like Dariush Bayandur.
And what does he argue?
He argues that Iranian actors, clerics, the military, domestic political factions, they had far more agency than this whole marionette version of history allows.
The idea that Iranians were just puppets on CIA strings.
Exactly. Bayandur says, no, domestic opposition to Mossadegh was real and driving the events.
And the smoking gun for this is that cable we talked about at the very beginning.
Yes. Kermit Roosevelt's cable on the morning of August 19th.
He sends a message saying the plan failed, yet later he claimed he brilliantly orchestrated the whole thing.
It suggests he didn't even foresee the violent events of that afternoon.
I look at it this way. It's like Kermit Roosevelt and the CIA are like a surfer taking credit for creating the wave.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. Did the CIA actually orchestrate the overthrow, or did they just throw a bunch of cash at a wave of domestic Iranian chaos?
And then just ride it to shore.
Exactly, and claim they made the ocean move.
I love that. And maintaining intellectual honesty means we really have to let you, the listener, sit with this uncertainty.
It's tough to do.
It is. But the sources show there is simply no scholarly consensus on how decisive the CIA truly was.
Okay, so if we aren't entirely sure who really drove the events, we are equally uncertain about exactly why the U.S. got involved in the first place.
Which brings us back to the core driving question of our deep dive.
Right. Oil versus communism.
Historians remain fiercely divided on the primary U.S. motive.
Was it the fear of the Tudor party or the desire to control Iranian oil?
It's a huge debate.
Hmm.
And you add in the partisan reality in Washington, and it gets even messier.
Yeah, the approach to Iran changed wildly based on the U.S. president.
Truman, who was a Democrat, wanted diplomatic mediation.
He refused to do a coup.
Right. But then Eisenhower, a Republican, chose covert containment.
And then Carter, another Democrat, pushed human rights later on.
This raises an important question, though. Because while partisan differences initiated the coup and eventually strained the alliance under Carter,
what happened in the middle?
Exactly. The sources make clear that between 1953 and 1977, the embrace of the autocratic Shah was totally bipartisan.
Oh, wow. So Republicans and Democrats alike.
Yes. The machinery of U.S. foreign policy largely operated on a bipartisan consensus to protect that 1953 investment.
Regardless of the human cost.
Regardless of SEVAC. Regardless of the repression.
So what does this all mean? Did the political back and forth in Washington ultimately doom Iranian democracy?
It's the big question.
It makes me wonder about the ultimate counterfactual. Like, would Iran's democracy have survived without the coup?
I mean, Mossadegh had huge domestic problems,
Yeah.
but they were denied the chance to figure it out themselves.
They were robbed of their own history.
They really were.
So, bringing this deep dive to a close, a good historical exploration doesn't give you all the answers.
No, it gives you better questions.
It really does. The true legacy of 1953 is just genuine uncertainty.
Absolutely. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
If a single morning cable from 1953 can unravel decades of the tidy CIA mastermind narrative, if it forces us to recognize the messy reality of local Iranian agency, what major global conflicts happening today are we completely misunderstanding?
Oh, wow.
Or are we too quick to assume superpowers are pulling all the strings while ignoring the complex local forces actually driving history?
That is a fascinating question to leave on. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us, and we'll see you next time.